Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, April 4th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold was sort of trying to find its way in the markets today. Right now, we currently have gold and silver a little pressure. We have gold down 680 for gold at 1216. Silver down 12, 1503. Platinum was down 17 at 945. And you have palladium down 15 at $554. You have the USDX today just trading down slightly, 0.04 at 94.57. Crude oil was down over 1.06 at 35.73, and the paper markets, they were up big earlier in the day, but the Dow is down 56 points, 17,736, the NASDAQ down 22, 48.91, the S&P down 6, 2,066, 10-year yield still at 1.78, you know, it's interesting to see that low of a yield when everyone is so positive about the stock market. You have Japan was down huge overnight, almost 4%, 3.5%. Japan down big. And that brings me up, I came across an article earlier, and it's about the 17 countries that have the highest level of government debt. Everyone is now, again, has their eyes on Greece, as they try to get more money from the international, well, from the IMF, to help its, with its, economy. So, you know, we're back to Greece, folks. And, this article from the Business Insider, lists, the various countries and the amount of debt that they have. And they listed the top 17 countries in the world that carry the greatest debt. And, of course, you have Iceland, there's number 17. And, I mean, you have Barbados, France, Spain, Belgium, Singapore. What I thought was interesting about this was the United States is number 10. So here we are, the largest economy in the world, you know, the leader of the free world. And here we're sitting at number 10, carrying the greatest debt of the world, along with countries like Barbados and Iceland and Bhutan and Cyprus. Pardon?
Is that list, is it organized according to the amount of money that's owed or the percentage of gross domestic product?
Gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we have.
Well, they're still presuming. I mean, the big question is, if they're using the official United States national debt of $19 trillion, we might come in number 10. But according to Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, it's actually over $200 trillion, in which case we are
we're number one. We'd be number one.
Yeah.
But
this is something that Trump will fix when he gets in office. When we come into these lists, we'll always be number one on these lists, all of them.
But the reason I bring this up, Al, is because Japan, in which we talked about having a big drop of, over 3.5%, and their difficulties we talked about last week, they're actually number one on the list. So, you have the point was you have all these little countries, meaningless countries, and I'm sure they're very meaningful to the citizens of those countries, but the overview of the standing of countries for worldwide and,
where does the European Union come in?
Well, they have it broken down by country, not by the European Union. You have Greece. You have Greece is number two. You have Italy and Portugal and so forth. But so as a whole, yeah, you have the most of Europe. You have most of the quite a few European countries in there, the group that is in the top 17. So, so I found that interesting that I wanted to share with the listeners. This has also gone into our newsletter that will be coming out later this afternoon. So if you'd like a copy of this report, you could go to our website, dgscoins.com, and go ahead and sign up for the weekly newsletter.
So, speaking of Greece, I got an article here from AFP, which is the French equivalent for the Associated Press. The headline is, Greece wants IMF explanations over WikiLeaks report. Greece on Saturday demanded explanations from the International Monetary Fund after WikiLeaks said that the lender, that would be the IMF, sought a crisis event to push the indebted nation, that would be Greece, into concluding talks over its reforms. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras said that he would write to the IMF chief Christine Lagarde and reach out to European leaders after WikiLeaks published what it said was a transcript of a teleconference in which IMF officials complained that Athens only moves decisively when faced with the peril of default. An event was therefore needed to drive the threat of default and get the Greeks to act. The nature of such an event was not specified. What sort of an event do you suppose they might be talking about? You think they could be talking about an event like Pearl Harbor or the Gulf of Tonkin attack or the 9/11 destruction of three buildings and part of the Pentagon? Is that the kind of event they're talking about?
The event.
Huh? They are apparently caught the IMF talking about, or representatives of the IMF said, we need an event to make the Greeks jump. Right? Reality is not sufficiently dire. And it's the implication is fascinating to me. It indicates that the IMF, like many other governments, is not averse to causing perhaps false flag crises. Just to push ostensible allies into doing what they want. Let's set off a bomb and see if that makes them, let them go along with the deal. The Greek government reacted strongly to the report saying it wanted the IMF to clarify its position. As if the IMF is going to clarify the threat to cause some sort of an unspecified event. The IMF said it did not comment on leaks or supposed reports of internal discussions. So we get no comment out of the IMF to speak of, but this is fascinating. It's on one level, it's not surprising that it's happened, but it's surprising that it's been disclosed, and it illustrates, it's another example of something we've talked about on this program from time to time. There is no secrecy in the internet age. Huh? If you've got a secret, you better not put it into digital form, because it's all going to be revealed sooner or later. And these people, one way or another, they created a transcript of this telephone conversation that involved the IMF and some creditors and whoever. And here they are talking about the need for an event. This is like gangsters working with pseudonyms. They talk about, instead of saying we need to kill that guy, they talk about a hit or a contract, or they have some other language that they use in order to communicate a criminal intent to someone else. The point is that the IMF is not morally superior to the mafia, the Bloods, the Crips. They're just a little better. They've got a little more money, got a little sleeker accommodations and clothes and cars and perhaps uniforms and whatever. But in the end, it's just thuggery. They're not averse to thuggery. They'd like to handle it, you know, make them an offer they can't refuse, but if you got to do the thuggery, do the thuggery. So in any case, Greece wants an explanation, and they, of course, won't get one, but, you know, the solution to the Greek problem is fairly simple. I've said it a number of times. Greece needs to just emulate Iceland and file for bankruptcy. Write off the debt. That's all. Start from square one and rebuild from that point on. Right? It'll be a difficult time for 18 to 24 months, and by then they should be, if the peak Greek people are worth anything, they'll be back on track and begin to regain their prosperity.
Well, I don't know. This article says Iceland is prior to the credit crisis. Government debt was a modest 27% of GDP 8 years on, and the country's still dealing with the collapse of the banking system. So, you know, I don't think it's that easy to get rid of debt. And, you know, and it's the same thing we have today. I saw just now, I was seeing over the wire where Donald Trump is claiming that we, well, I've heard this all day, that we're on the verge of a very massive recession, which I agree, but he says and give him 8 years and he'll make America's $19 trillion debt go away. And I think it's impossible to do that in 8 years, considering when we talk about the higher trillions of dollars that we have, when you include all of our liabilities. He wants to do all this without tweaking Social Security and Medicaid. He wants to cut taxes and really have no cut in spending. So I don't know how you can do that. I don't care how many manufacturing, how much you bring back into this country. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
I agree that that's improbable.
It's just not going to happen.
You know, one of the things I saw, I was watching a couple of Trump videos just yesterday. Somebody sent me one that was kind of funny, and then there was another one attached. And the thing that impressed me about it is the size of the crowds that are attracted to when Trump speaks. I mean, create two tents, put one over here on the left, one on the right. Send Hillary and Bernie Sanders and send Kasich and Cruz and put them all in one tent and put Trump in the other one and see who draws the crowd. And Trump will probably draw a bigger crowd than all the rest of them put together. And the reason that's important is this. I didn't go to a lot of concerts when I was a kid and the rest of that sort of thing, but the last time I went to one, maybe 20 years ago, Stevie Nicks, and I don't even remember who she was singing with. Everybody else probably remembers that band name. I don't even pay attention to it. But what crossed my mind is that we don't really go to see the performer. We go to see the crowd. If we were really interested in some performer's music, for example, why go to a concert? You can't hear what they're singing. Everybody's screaming and shouting and moving around. You can't hear if you want. If you really like the song, get yourself, save yourself $50 or $100 that you might be paying for the seat, maybe more than that, and get yourself a CD. All right, and listen to it. Then you can hear the sound clearly. The point is, we go to see the crowd. And why some people draw crowds and why they don't draw crowds is not necessarily clear. Certainly not to me. Some people just have a kind of random good luck and they draw crowds for a while. And that's what we really go to see, is the crowd. And Trump, for whatever reason, he's pulling in those crowds right now. That's what makes him real. If Trump doesn't draw a crowd, nobody can know. Who is he? You know, it's like anyone else. If you don't have an audience, you can talk all you want. Nobody pays any attention. It doesn't count for anything. It's just white noise. If you draw an audience, now you become significant. Not because you are necessarily, you know, communicating great ideas, but because for reasons that are not necessarily clear or apparent, the people flock to the crowd. And that's what we go to see, as a crowd. And when you look at Trump and you see the size of the crowds he attracts,
it's entertainment.
Well, whatever it is.
Pure entertainment.
It should translate into votes. And it should translate into votes that the rest of them mm-hmm. can't match at this time.
Mm-hmm. So. But back to the debt. Yeah, I don't think there's anything. I mean, it can't hurt. However, he does believe a strong dollar is bad for this country. So if he weakens our currency, Donald Trump will be very good for gold. Will be very
well,
good.
Kind of weakening it.
Donald Trump will be. Well, he's gonna push it along. Quicker than anyone else. Donald Trump is very good. He's bad for stocks. He's good for gold. And
I think Trump is in for a learning experience. I mean, there's a lot of things that he talks about doing that anyone can talk about doing.
He will still
but I think
be good
there's,
for gold.
I think he probably will be, but just the same, he's biting.
Either or will be.
He's biting off a lot more than anyone is likely to be able to choose.
Either or.
I'm not being critical. I'm just saying, look.
Democrats are. I mean, we're in a situation in this country where it doesn't matter who gets elected. We're still in a bad place to be. Your dollar is going to continue to erode. We have debt that I'm sorry, he's not. No one is going to be able to repay in 8 years. And I gold is just going to go higher. I mean, gold and silver have this fundamentals that and they are supported by our economy and all the other numbers that are out there that would affect gold and silver. But considering the Democrats are pro Wall Street, they might just drag it out a little bit longer. But I think with Trump, I think it would happen very quickly. And I think we'd have a very good, we're going to have a good year anyway for gold. But
you mean this year, 2016?
This year, I think we're still going to have a good year. I don't think we're going to.
2017 or January 2017. And then what do you think is going to happen in 2017? Do you have any predictions for us?
Not at this point in time, but, I don't believe we'll have 2,000 gold at the end of the year. We could. I think something has to happen prior to that. And I've always.
We could see 1,700.
Mm-hmm. And I do believe that if Trump is elected, I believe they will let the economy drop just to keep him busy so he doesn't have anything else to do. He will be so focused on the economy that, who's to say, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be a show. I mean, this is one of the most extraordinary elections I've ever seen or heard of. We have people talking about the size of other candidates' hands and their private parts. Right? We have photograph of one of the potential first ladies in the buff. We've got a candidate running who is quite possibly going to be indicted for crimes. An aging socialist or communist, Cruz probably isn't even technically eligible to run because he was born in Canada and remained a Canadian citizen until just a couple of years ago. And we've got people, fights and demonstrations outside of the wherever the candidates are making presentations and so on. I mean, this is an election for the ages. We'll see how this shapes up. But just one crazy, spectacular thing after another. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. And stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. I want to remind folks that it's springtime. Here it is, April 4th. Springtime, Melody, and you know what that means, don't you?
What's that?
It means the Chinese Dog Meat Festival is coming up on June 20th. So those of you who like dog meat, you know, it's not too late to make plans for visiting China. Animal rights activists are seeking to shut down annual summer dog meat festival in southern China, blamed for blackening the country's international reputation as well as fueling extreme cruelty to canines and unhygienic food handling practices. With an estimated 10 to 20 million dogs are killed for their meat each year in China, the June 20th event in the city of Yulin has come to symbolize the cruelty and lack of hygiene associated with the largely unregulated industry. Yu Hongmei, director of the Vshine Animal Protection Association, said China needs to progress with the times. Preventing cruelty to animals is a sign of a mature, civilized society. So my comment, and is that knowing you're a dog lover, Melody, I thought you'd be interested in this. China is where man's best friend becomes man's best snack. If you're in China, dog. It's what's for dinner, Melody.
Well, I don't think that's funny at all, Al.
Well, I thought
that's
it was,
really
I
poor.
Thought it was
hey,
weird.
Al, how about my? It's poor taste.
Well, I guess you put a little needs a little salt, maybe.
Done and
a little
poor
salt
taste.
Or pepper.
But well, you know what? That's the whole thing. I think people, we've come to know China as, you know, the country where all of our manufacturing has gone. They produce all these wonderful cheap products and trinkets that are sent back to the U.S. so the American consumer can buy and support their economy. And yet, you know, you see how far behind and how poor of a country China still is, and their practices, it's their culture. I mean, here, you know, and they have their culture is changing to catch up to, you know, the new money. Some of it is, but, you know, you'll see it changing. You'll see their diets change. That's one of the biggest things that you'll see, you know, when you have this change of their lifestyles because of the amount of money that some of these people are beginning to have that they didn't have before. It becomes a little more rich in protein and so forth. And China is not what everybody thinks China is.
China has more problems. I mean, when we talk about Donald Trump talking about how he's going to eliminate the $19 trillion national debt, which may actually be over $200 trillion, but his notion about eliminating the national debt is a little bit like the Chinese Communist Party's idea about eliminating poverty in China. There's big trouble over there. There's big problems. And sooner or later, just as Donald Trump may have to admit that he can't solve the $19 trillion national debt problem all by himself, there are going to be people in China who are going to have to admit, at least privately, that they can't really provide the kind of advance for people's standard of living that they may have hoped to provide over the past several years. It may be that they're just running out of gas for that. And more trouble than they can imagine. Again, I've seen the reports and talked about it on the program a couple of times. Pollution from China is so strong that it can be detected in California. The pollution can cross the Pacific Ocean and still be detectable. That gives you, I mean, that indicates that living in parts of China are like living in the muffler of an automobile. They're lucky if they can find any oxygen to breathe. The water pollution, serious problem with water pollution. The city of Peking has allegedly sunk something like 8 feet because they've sucked all the water out from underneath Peking. And maybe they didn't get it all, but they've taken so much of the groundwater out from beneath Peking that the ground itself has dropped by 8 foot. Right? Peking is 8 feet lower than it was, who knows, 25, 50 years ago. You know, you talk about problems in this country. I don't know what's going to happen. And we see the stories, you hear all the stories of the Chinese millionaires and billionaires that are engaged in capital flight. They're trying to get their wealth out of the country, get it someplace else, and perhaps get themselves out of the country, get their family out of the country. What's that telling you? It's telling you that people with real wealth over there don't, a lot of them at least, don't have real confidence in the Chinese economy. They're anticipating serious trouble, and they're trying to get their wealth out of there before their wealth disappears or is seized or confiscated or whatever, and then try to get themselves and their family out. You know, the indicators are there that you talk about China being fairly strong or whatever. They're riding the tiger, as are we. But I think they've got bigger tigers than we do.
It'll certainly be dangerous to
ride the American tiger, but it's going to be really dangerous to ride the Chinese tiger. when they fall off, there's going to be trouble that will be hard for people to believe.
You know, there's discussions of bringing all these jobs back and so forth. And today there was a report out by Citigroup. It involves the banking industry, though, but it all involves the technology that's taking over jobs that people used to do. And, you know, you can deposit checks now by using a smartphone. You can send cash to people by using a program. You don't have to go into a Wells Fargo to send off any money orders or a bank to do bank wires and so forth. There's an app that does it. Another 30% of banking jobs can be lost. Now, this isn't in the future. This is from 2015 to 2025. So it's not like these job losses are going to be starting 2025 to 2030. They're starting today. 30% of bank jobs can be lost, and this is all due to retail banking automation. And so you have PayPal, you have you have all different types of programs.
You got Bitcoin.
That, these are the processing things that we're talking about. You know, you can't go to any store that you want and pay for Bitcoin. This is still Bitcoin. Mm. This is still real transactions that normal people make, not Bitcoin people. And so this is all robotic. This is all technology that is going to put these people out of jobs. And I was thinking when you were talking about China, you know, here the American consumer was happy to buy trinkets from China, so we felt wealthy, but yet we empowered China in the process. Now, the second step is we love technology so much, you know, we're pretty much buying and using technology that's going to take more jobs away from us. So the American people are sort of, and I said this a long time, basically financing the destruction of America. We're getting poorer and poorer, and we're paying for it because we like trinkets and we like technology. And what does the technology do to us? It's more frustrating.
What does more efficiency necessarily mean?
Well, it's great for the multinational.
It means
cheaper for us.
Well, it means cheaper. It means cheaper labor and cheaper products and one thing another like that. But inevitably, as we become more and more efficient, and the efficiency, as long as we're pursuing the almighty dollar, you can't avoid the efficiency. Somebody comes in and says, listen, I got something here to cut your cost by 10%. What are you going to do? If it's real, you're going to take it. And the next guy comes in and says, I got a program to cut your cost by 20%. Okay.
Yeah, but Al.
I mean, you can't resist the efficiency. And the point here is not doom and gloom per se, but it is to recognize
it's
more like antibiotics.
It's no jobs. There are people
jobs.
So how much better can this economy be when people don't have the money to buy anything? Let me just say one more thing. And when was the last time anyone saw any type of banking fee go down? Banking fees keep going higher and higher. So they're not passing on those savings to anyone except those savings,
make. Savings at the banks. I mean, after they've cut the interest rate down
it's
to
all
near
going
zero,
into
the
their
banks
pockets.
Are bind trying to make a buck in the first place. The only way they perhaps can make a buck is with fees and fines and penalties and whatever else they can lay on their arbitrary costs. But have a near zero, and especially if it goes to negative zero. I mean, that negative zero interest, negative interest rates, it may put a lot of banks, it may put some banks out of business. But the point I wanted to make is this. We talk about these things, and it's not a matter of just, we talk about things like technology and robots and it's taking jobs. Well, yeah, they are. And I'm not, but I'm saying it is inevitable. If they can do it cheaper, all right, they're going to be used. We're going to use them, and everybody will succumb to that temptation. Nobody's going to say, oh, I don't want a robot because it'll cut my labor costs by 30%. Nobody is going
That's
to say
point.
That. They're going to say, how can I finance and could I get two? That's what's going to happen. And what we're doing here is something like, it reminds me of the invention of antibiotics. starting with penicillin, probably in the late 1800s. I don't know when they identified penicillin, maybe in the early 1900s, I'm not sure. But it's been around for at least a century, and or roughly a century, and maybe more than that. A great, wonderful invention, a wonderful advance in terms of technology. And it has undoubtedly saved millions of lives, if not tens of millions of lives, and maybe hundreds of millions of lives, thanks to antibiotics. But what else have they done? Our advanced antibiotics, we have created superbugs. We keep on using antibiotics on everything, including livestock. We use this wonderful technology, and then it has a dark side. It's a wonderful technology. It keeps people alive, but it over time, it causes the viruses and pathogens that are exposed to the antibiotics. They develop their own immunity to the antibiotics. And then we wind up with superbugs. And now we've got large populations, populations that have never been seen before on the face of this earth. And we have emerging superbugs that if they get loose in these populations, we could see trouble that make the Black Death look like a cakewalk.
All created by governments.
Well, it's one of those things, and the only thing we're trying to do on this program is to communicate the idea. I mean, sometimes it's going to sound like we're just selling gloom and doom in the rest. And what I'm trying to say is that there are good technologies, valuable technologies, that nevertheless have negative consequences. Even if they're mostly good and mostly great, you got to watch. You've got to use your own eyes and ears and whatever and decide for yourself which technologies do you want to actually implement in your life, because it's not just about saving money. Everybody thinks it is. Efficiency is all about saving money. There's another part. It's when you embrace these values that are purely economic, then everything is in terms of dollars and cents, and that's not necessarily a good thing. You need to get some system of values. What's good for the nation? And maintaining some sort of employment levels is good for the nation. It might not be good for the economy, but it's good for the nation. And I don't. There aren't easy answers to these questions, but if you are going to be focused strictly on the economy, then you're going to be focused strictly on whether you're making more money or less money. And the economy and economics, it provides one system of values. But it doesn't care who lives or dies. It doesn't care if you get married or you get divorced or whatever. That has nothing to do with the economy per se. It's all about the money. Over in the nation, if you're living in the nation, and that's where you focus your life and your concerns, and that's where you get your system of values, all right, in that nation, you have a different system of values, and it's something to bear in mind. If all we do is look at things economic, and we have to, we can't get away from them. I mean, economics isn't bad per se.
Oh, absolutely
not. Not necessarily.
But the whole point, Al.
Compatible with human life.
Well, I get my system of values from God, not from a nation, not from economics. But we live in a world today that we're here to help people to understand where we're headed in the future. And I really don't see a bright spot. And yeah, you're right. Efficiency, it's great for the multinational corporations that are able to introduce this technology. They continue to get wealthier, more powerful. But for guys that
but even
us
if
that
they
live
do,
on the
eventually
street,
they get so efficient they can't. No one is left to build their products. Who has any money to buy them?
They don't need people. They have their technology. And, you know,
I know, but even the technology, if it's based on selling things, and you put everybody
that means
out of work,
be a
where do you get the money? Where do they get the money?
There'll be a reduction of population, because that's the whole point. Because there won't be enough to go all the way around, so you got to reduce the population. I mean, we do have a baby boomer generation, as many countries around the world do, and there's a large number of us that'll be. So, hey, the multinationals, corporations, bankers, whoever, the elite, they only got to hang on for another 30 years. Until the baby boomers cease to exist, along with Japan's baby boomers, and even China has a problem it's and then you just have to say, is this just the way the world is evolving? And it is, lots of it is good.
Well,
it is good.
That's the point. It is the way the world is evolving right now, and we are coming into a time and that won't be easily avoided. We're going to come into a
problem.
Time with a lot of trouble. And it's part of the reason we do this program, to say, hey, look, you know, there's evidence that there is trouble approaching and you need to get prepared. We'll take a break for some commercials. Melody, we'll be right back on Financial Survival. Just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedarstrom.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just want to remind the listeners, we had a great response to our $20 Mint State 61 Liberty gold pieces, so we're going to continue that special today at $1,310. I actually went online, and because I wanted to give an online price for American Gold Eagles, and American Gold Eagles, they were selling for $1,281. Our Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold pieces are selling for $1,310. It's $29 difference, folks. I mean, that's an incredible buy. Over 20 years.
You're referring to collectible coins.
Mint State 61 $20 Liberty coins. They're semi-collectible coins, but at these prices, with a $29 spread between an American Gold Eagle and a Mint State 61 $20 gold piece over 20 years, I've never seen this spread where we could offer this spread to you. Normally, the coin would sell for closer to $1,400, but because I'm giving you a special and my prices, and this is how you can get this coin at this price, so close to a bullion. American Gold Eagle, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit the website today, folks, and sign up for the weekly newsletter, dgscoins.com. We had a question that came in on Friday, and She says, on your radio show on Friday, you mentioned how some economists were only recommending 5% investments in gold and silver. Could you please give your opinions on why this is not a good idea? She personally doesn't understand why you would hold on to any fiat money. She's always been confused on why these economists would be recommending holding only a small portion in metals. She says, thank you for your interesting and informative information that we have made a difference in her life. So thank you very much, Valerie. We appreciate your question and your comments. And what I would like to say, Al, is the reason they only recommend 5% investments in gold and silver is because they want to trade you in the future. When you buy gold and silver, it's something you want to hold on to. And you don't want to trade unless it truly fits your personal needs. Rarely in over 20 years have we ever traded, you know, to where there was, where we're trading on a regular basis. Oh, you got to trade this. Oh, you got to trade this. There are times when, yeah, we look if certain spreads, like today, if you have all gold bullion coins and you want to trade for $20 gold pieces at a $29 spread, yeah, that's a good trade. That would be a good trade to diversify your portfolio. So and it depends on what you're holding, how much you're holding, in order to make it a good trade. So the whole system of trading when it comes to physical gold, you have to view and understand what you're doing, and that's what we do here at Discount Gold and Silver. We try and see if it's a good thing.
I think one of the other questions. I think one of the other questions for the one of the other things for the Valerie to consider is, just because you found some economist who said this, that, or the other, you know, it's like anything else, including me. You've got to make up your own mind whether you think whoever's giving you some sort of suggestion or offering an opinion or whatever, you got to sit back and say, number one, is this individual competent? Number two, are they honest? And some people just have a flat-out agenda and the rest of that sort of thing, and you have to filter through that. Just because a couple of economists said 5%, what's that mean? What did these economists tell us in 2007? Did they say we're going to have a great recession in 2008?
Most everybody did.
Well, the point behind it is you can listen to anyone, including me, and you can listen to the information, you weigh it, and you consider it, but you have to make up your own mind what you're going to do with that information, because in the end, you're the one who's going to profit or lose, depending on what sort of decisions you make. So you can't just automatically, you know, believe whatever you hear, but you can consider it. You say, well, that's an interesting idea, but is it true? Is it false? Is it, you know, improbable? Probable? Where do you put it? And then you try to do the best you can with the information you have and your ability to, you know, assess that information. But,
and I think that's the
5%, whoever's making that, differs, their opinion differs from mine and Melody's on this basis. You can look, you will not, you do any study on fiat currencies, which is what we have with paper dollars and even digital dollars. When it's been tried in the past, there are allegedly, according to some reports, there have been something like 275 times that one government or another has tried fiat currency throughout the history of man. And every single one of them wound up with a collapse, with the exception of the one we have right now and a couple others that are going on right now. But inevitably, the odds are the fiat dollar is going to go bye-bye. And it's already, we see evidence of that. People look at this and understand the fiat dollar is only worth roughly a nickel compared to, in purchasing power, compared to what it was, what it could purchase back in 1971. We've lost 95% or more. Some people say 96, 97. The trend is obvious. We've gone from 100% to 90% to 80% to now we're down to 5%, and then 4, 3, 2, 1. So, I mean, the trend is, It can't be refuted, can't be denied. You look at that and you say, well, you know, the day is coming when the dollar is going to be worth nothing. Well, what is going to be worth something at that point in time? And one of the answers is going to be gold. Another one is silver. I mean, land will be worth something, tools will be worth some, guns, bullets, food, water, a lot of things will have value, but in terms of being liquid, where you can walk down the street and say, listen, I have a coin here, and I would like to use it to pay for something. Now, you might want to use silver, you might want to use gold if it's big purchases and small purchases, silver. But just the same, it will be accepted. And the odds are that the fiat dollar is going to die. And probably not so long from now. And I don't mean in the next week or two or whatever, but it seems almost impossible to imagine that the fiat dollar is going to last another 5 years. Right? It's not impossible, but it seems extremely unlikely. It could go in 3 years. It could go before the end of this year. No one knows, or at least I don't know. But still, we have a good idea that this is going to happen. And from my perspective, this is the fate of the fiat dollar. The inevitable fate of the fiat, what appears to be the inevitable fate of the fiat dollar, is the reason you have to look at gold or silver. Gold gets worth less, or excuse me, the dollar gets worth less and less and less. And if you've got $100,000 that is stored in paper dollars that are now worth only a couple of pennies, each of them, what is your purchasing power? What was the point to have in that $100,000 in cash back in 1971 if you've saved it to leave to your grandchildren or great-grandchildren or whatever? And it turns out that your dollars are only worth a couple of cents compared to what they were back in 1971. On the other hand, if you had some gold, if you'd put the same $100,000 into gold at a time when gold was still in the neighborhood of $35 an ounce, what would your $100,000 be worth today? I mean, it would be, it's just evidence that you take a long view, you look at the fundamentals, and you have to sit back and say, look, this is going to happen, but I don't know when. All right.
I think over the years, there's been so much conditioning when it comes to investments and holding on to your money. I talk to a lot of people, and, you know, we all thought that we get to retirement age, we could put the money into the bank and let it collect a decent amount of interest, and we wouldn't have to worry about our money. But you do have to worry about your money in these times. And it does, that's why the fundamentals for gold and silver, we always go back to the fiat currency when it began and what it does over a period of time. This is why we are where we are today. And I believe these analysts who suggest a 5% investments in gold and silver, most of them are from Wall Street. Most of them are looking to put you in paper, in bonds, in paper, and other things, number one, to trade. And I do believe in being diversified. I have a lot of clients that are 100% in gold and silver. I have some that are 50% in gold and, you know, if half of their assets are in gold and silver. So it comes back to the suitability for each person where you need to be. I have a lot of clients who have retirement accounts, pension plans, IRAs. They don't want to cancel them out and pay the taxes and penalties. Well, there's options for them. They can put it into a gold and silver precious metals IRA. They are available. And is it as good as taking physical delivery? No, it isn't. But yet it's an option that people can have because it's better than holding paper in your IRAs. So to me, 5%, they can't trade you. They can't trade your account. They don't make money on 5% of gold or more than 5% in your portfolio. Most of them don't even sell gold. And if they do sell gold, that's why they recommend the low percent. They want you in paper. And it really is as simple as that. They want you in paper.
Because they make their money over
they
on
make their,
fees.
They make their money on fees.
And the more you move your paper and say, okay, yeah. I bought a GM today, but tomorrow, oh, I saw a deal on IBM. I'm going to dump the GM and buy the IBM. The day after that, you find some other stock you want to buy, and you sell the stock you have and buy another one. And every time you make one of those moves, you're going to pay some sort of a fee, a percentage, something. They make money every time you make a move. The problem they have, or the problem that Wall Street has with gold is and silver, is that generally speaking, when people buy it, they hold it. All right. You have to sell it sometimes. You know, it's not absolute rule. But when people are not buying gold today and silver tomorrow and rhodium the day after that and platinum the day after that, well, the traders could make a buck. Brokers could make a buck on that kind of activity. when you buy it once and you hold it for years, they're not making any more money. It's part of the reason why these stockbrokers on Wall Street, they want to do stocks, do paper.
And it isn't any different.
They don't make any money off of it.
And it isn't any different than those who sell mining shares, too. I mean, at one point in time, my belief, ETFs. The precious metals ETFs, why do you think they were created? Number one, now Wall Street could sell you gold. And number two, it helps manipulate the price of gold. And, you know, when you have pressure on the stock markets, yeah, people run to a safe haven, which it used to be bonds. They still do bonds. And it was always gold. They never had anything to sell. And I believe that's why they created ETFs. It's a terrific moneymaker for them. And now they have options to tell. Now they can sell you ETFs when their clients go to them and say, you know, I want to buy some physical gold. Oh, well, you don't want to have to worry about taking physical delivery, but we do have these ETFs. It'll give you the same return and blah, blah, blah. And there goes the pitch. But ETFs, shares, mining shares, you speculate and they're paper. You don't really own gold.
Every one of your paper debt instruments are just a
promise to pay.
That's all it is.
Well, I'm beginning to sound
Boy
like Scout, you know.
Scout's honor. You can trust me. Give me $100,000 worth of your real wealth, and I promise to give you back $120,000 3 years from now or 5 years from now or whenever. The truth is we've got so many promises out there that they can't all be kept. That's all a debt is a promise to pay. And if you've got a piece of paper that says $100,000 in the upper right-hand corner, and you say, ha-ha, I'm rich, I've got $100,000. No, you don't. You have only a promise to pay at a time when the world is awash in so many promises that they can't all be paid. It's like the national debt, $19 trillion, and perhaps over $200 trillion. These are numbers that can't be paid. And sooner or later, the government's going to have to come forward and they're going to have to say, sorry, we don't have any money. We're broke. They either have to expressly repudiate the debts or they have to cause hyperinflation where a dollar they can give you, they owe you $100,000. They'll give you $100,000 back, but they'll only have the purchasing power of maybe $1,000. By hyperinflation, they eliminate the debt. By inflation, they slow the debt. By outright repudiation, they eliminate the debt. Mm-hmm. But one of these has got to take place because the debt is too big to ever be repaid. And it's one of the reasons, all right, we look at it, what happens to fiat dollars? They always blow up. They always explode. They always collapse their economy. Stay away from fiat dollars. What happens when you have too much debt? It can't be paid. That's all. And when they cancel the debt, they make the correlative paper debt instruments worthless. If the government steps up and they say, gee whiz, you'll never believe it, but we can't pay that $19 trillion. What's that mean? It means $19 trillion worth of U.S. bonds are worthless. And everybody holding them who thought they had collectively $19 trillion in wealth are going to find out they've been wiped out. On the other hand, if they were holding a handful of gold, they would say, lucky me, because I was not wiped out when they canceled, repudiated, or hyperinflated the debt. We're out of time, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.